This is Rapholix After Hours.
What do you know? I teased something in episode 93 and 94, and the something is sitting in front of me. Welcome, everybody, to Rack Addicts After Hours, episode 95. It is my pleasure to introduce Ian. Ian O, Ian from Void Null, Ian from Modcaf, Ian from many places, apparently. How are you doing?
Hastings. I'm from Hastings originally, yeah.
The seaside town battle?
Just down the road. Almost. Just down the road from battle,
oh, yes. Lovely, lovely. We've got a three-piece band for your listeners today. Weekly update is always where we start. I'll let you brew on that one, Ian. But Pete, what have you been up to?
Well, it looks like, unfortunately, I've turned into a serial synth returner.
Not the Deckard's Dream.
Yes, the Deckard's...
Well, not the Deckard's Dream, the Deckard's Voice.
Yes, the Deckard's Voice has gone back.
Unexpected. You were vaguely tempted at one point, weren't you?
I was super tempted by that. You're going to have to tell us the story.
Yeah.
The sound was great. It sounded as expected. It had that kind of Deckard's Dream CS80 sound to it.
You said it was a pleasant fizz.
Yeah, the sound worked, but what it didn't have was didn't have enough external modulation opportunities. Obviously, the Deckard's Dream itself is a wonderful piece of kit. I wish I had one, and I do aspire to get one at some point. But the module, I didn't think it was executed as well as it could have been.
So taking an eighth of a polysynth might not have been the best call.
In fact, I think my IntelliJ Atlantis is a much better single voice complete synth in a module in respect to how it's designed and the modulation opportunities that it presents.
So without the excitement of a shiny new delicious voice, is the secret project that we'll probably talk about later, is that you might be try something that you were going to do but with the Atlantis instead?
Yeah, I mean,
or rethink.
I've got plenty of things to lean back on, so it was just I just got a bit overexcited about it. I thought it was going to be a lot more than it was, and I did try a lot of combinations and worked it through effects, and I just couldn't get anything out of it. And if it was half the price that it was,
what was it? Nearly six?
£700. I would have most probably gone, oh well, I've just put it to one side. But at that sort of money, I just couldn't justify it. So it went back, and
fair enough.
I've got the Endorphins ground control.
Oh, that's the sequencer.
Yeah, and cool. I've also got another effects aid, but
the big one. You're gonna keep both?
Yes, and I've also got the 1010 music black box.
All well, probably a little bit more than the price of just the return, but that's quite a haul.
I sort of overcompensated.
But you're still probably are you under the price of the Polybrute?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's all right then.
And they were all on the shopping list anyway.
Yeah. Nice. Any of that gonna surface on the November ModCaf, you reckon? Have you got long enough? Approaching the end of October already.
Yeah, I'm sure I can sort of corral a few bits and pieces together and sort something out. My biggest problem is always a case. I'm going to have a different case for November.
Yes.
So I'm going silver in November rather than black.
Oh. I mean, we're still kind of sitting on the beginning of that case that you were going to make.
Yes.
Get on with it.
I know. I've been struggling. I mean, again, short supply of things. I've been trying to buy a air purifier, dust extractor for the workshop, and I had my sights set on this particular one, and as per normal with lots of things these days, it's out of stock.
Mm-hmm. And will be for ages, I imagine.
Yes, exactly.
Standard stuff. Just breathe in the fumes and the dust. It'll be fine.
No, it means the trouble is the really light particles, the really fine dust, it sort really of goes up into the atmosphere and then it just comes down and settles on everything. So I really need to have something that's going to try and pull it out the air. Plus, I don't want to be breathing it in anyway.
What do you make in the workshop?
Well, it depends. Basically, it's the sort of garage that's at the side of the house and it's kind of being converted. So as you first go in, it's an electronic workshop, which is a quarter of which it's walled off.
There's a really impressive huge wall of, you know, those little teeny tiny drawers with resistors and transistors and capacitors. Gosh. And those weird headers for that one thing that you know you need that one time.
Awesome.
Because I do actually do some electronics for real money as a job. So I've got a triocular microscope for doing the surface mount stuff, all the solder tweezers that actually can lift off those capacitors that are like grains of rice. You can unsolder them with that and reapply them, so do all that sort of stuff. But I can do all the through-hole stuff.
So basically, he's a super handy guy to know.
Super but handy mad
then you
scientist.
Go through a sliding door from that into the main part of the garage, which is really the rest of the garage. And I've got my table saw and the pillar drill and the bandsaw and all the stuff for making cases and doing that side of things. But there's so much stuff in there.
Last time I just remember digging through boxes for power supplies for some reason. What were we doing that for?
I think we were just trying to power some lighting up when we were doing those videos.
Yes, that's what it was. Yeah.
Because the other side is just all flight cases again, with sort of cases full of lasers and stuff, other lighting. And
so I was saying we needed him for the old version of the secret project that we're going to talk about in a bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, exactly. And what about Portal Gun? Have you got one of those?
You play Portal, haven't you?
I was thinking of Rick and Morty there for some reason.
Yeah,
I wasn't
thinking of that. You're Rick and Morty.
That's where I was going. That's where you're going. Sorry.
Sorry, it's an older reference. You wouldn't get it. I had an amazing segue that was going to be, speaking of expensive small boxes, but that was ages ago, because I wanted to check up on that one reverb pedal with the motorized faders.
Oh, gosh.
Is it still amazing?
It is still amazing, but I still cannot remember what it's called.
No, neither can I.
Really bad, isn't it? So it's made by... Chase Bliss.
And somebody else, though.
I think it was...
Maris?
It is Maris, is it? Yeah. Ooh, I think it is Maris, yeah. I think it's Maris. And is based on the old...
One of the lexicons, but I don't know.
Yeah. You
know,
and it's kind of got faders on it, which I think is quite nice.
That's the only way I recognise it.
The motorised faders, so yeah. It'll do its own little thing, which is quite cool.
But is it delicious?
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. I think in order to... You know, reverb's a thing, isn't it, obviously? It really can change your... Whatever it is you're doing, especially live. For me, it's always been important to try and get something that sounds real and right, I think. And for me, that pedal was the first time I kind of thought, right, no, actually, that's a sound that I'm really after.
You got it. Well, you probably have heard something very similar. Well, we've all probably heard something very similar on every single song we've ever heard.
Yeah, completely. So, yeah, it's good. I'm happy. It's a keeper for a while. We'll see.
For a while. Yeah. For a while. Well, Ian, what have you been up to this week? You haven't been on the podcast before, so you can go back as far as you like.
Work, I suppose, is always a big thing for me. It's the daytime job that enables you to
buy
focus.
Synths.
Yeah, buy synths and do other things. Yeah, I mean, it's all been a bit strange, isn't it, with the whole lockdown thing, really? Lockdown started, work stopped, and you kind of wonder what you're going to do with the rest of your life, and then suddenly work starts back up again. Video production is my daytime job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we suddenly got very busy doing virtual events and things like that. But up until that point, actually, I mean, it's sort of quite interesting. My life was, I thought I was going down a trajectory that was a little bit more kind of music orientated.
Mm-hmm.
Void Null, which I think is kind of mostly why I'm here.
We're going to dig into you a little bit later.
Was, you know, just really starting to kind of not take off, but we had sort of plans and things seemed to be going quite well. But it's very much a live thing, and that just stopped. All of our work in that area sort of stopped. It's, you know, it's been a couple of years of just rethinking and reshaping, you know, what we do and what we want to do.
Lovely. And the modular came home with you for a good while.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, my poor wife.
Well, didn't you say it was in the bedroom at
it
one point?
It was in the bedroom.
That's a bit of a risky move.
As well as an edit suite.
Oh.
And we didn't have a big bedroom. It was like the thing that you saw, it just obscured all the daylight, you know, from the windows. I can't even remember how I managed to persuade her to put up with that. And then, anyway, it went back to the office eventually, and actually we were all quite thankful.
It was a pretty cool garden shed while it was there for a little bit as well.
Yes, it was in the garden shed for a while, which actually was quite nice, being able to wander down the garden and have a little play. I do miss it not being nearby, you know. I do miss it not being able to kind of just, whenever the moment takes you, to have a bit of a creative... fiddle just to kind of nip down the garden or pop into the bedroom. So now I have to do a very purposeful drive, which means planning.
Ugh, gross.
So, yeah,
the enemy of spontaneity.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in my week, coffee has happened once more, and my frustration is now not water. I need to quiz you about distilling water at home now, which is a whole thing. Fines migration is the boring thing that's consumed my week, where small particles of coffee clog your filter and give you a headache. But it's really not that interesting. You know what we're here for? We're going to talk about the synth news that I found this week. There's only two, and they're quick. We like Instruo. You know Instruo?
Mm-hmm.
You've both got an Oct, haven't you?
Yes.
Ah, there's new modules. Three, to be precise. One is, I think they're Gaelic names, and I will get them wrong. Neoni. Neoni. Nioni. I don't know. That is another single oscillator. That is N-E-O-N-I, but the O has a slanty boy on top.
Neonai.
Noni.
Neonai.
One of those. Anyway, it's an oscillator, and it is through zero FM, wave folding, fun stuff, which the cleverer people than us three would probably understand why the certain technical bits are really cool, because he does go into detail in his videos. But if you check out the Neoni overview on the YouTube channel, it does have a bit more of a warm, precise thing. What he mentions quite a lot is that through the wavefold slider on the bottom, because wavefolding is a form of distortion, often you get a big volume change going from nothing to sine wave to crazy weird noise. He's compensated the volume a bit, so it sounds really natural. It's cool. I recommend you both check it out. There's also EAS, A with a squiggly boy on top, which means nature in some language. That's a logic module. Not very exciting for me. And then there is open bracket F, which is probably some sort of coding nomenclature for some function or something. It does offsets and attenuversion and stuff. It's kind of cool. We like Instro. Go and check them out. The second bit of news is maybe not that newsworthy, but you know fidget spinners, and they're the most annoying, weird craze that turned up like 4 years ago?
My son bought one last week.
Why?
I ask myself the same question.
Who knows? But this is probably the only good use for them. Somebody stuck one to a Eurorack module. It's the classic kind of tri-spoke situation, but there's a guitar pickup underneath. I assume it converts that electronic signal into regular Euro CV, so you can spin it and it can be an LFO or something. But it's like, actually, it's quite a cool tactile way to do your modulation. So it looks stupid and I hate it, but that's actually kind of a cool idea for a manual interaction thing.
It sounds pretty neat.
Probably cost £500, but I didn't check and I'm not going to. Ian. Yes. Ian O. If you're solo sometimes, but most importantly for me, Void Null.
Void Null.
We want to talk about Void Null.
Yeah.
I've got my questions. So, the boring one, because it puts you on the spot and you've got to do all the effort here and I get to sit back and relax. In your own words, what the hell is a void null? You're quite hard to Google because Google keeps going, did you mean null and void?
Yeah, we did that purposefully, of course.
So we can't find you.
Void Null is a partnership between myself and a very, very clever visual chap called James Ward, who I've been friends with for a very, very, very long time. He would actually work with me on various video projects, actually. We'd go out on corporate jobs and all the time that we worked together, we would talk about creative stuff because actually it was something that we were both really interested in. I obviously have always been interested in electronic music and ambient music and alternative kinds of music. And it kind of got to the point where we said, well, look, we should just try and get together and do something where I'm providing the audio and James is providing the visuals. So there was a particular sort of aesthetic to the way that we would approach that. At the same time, we were spending a lot of time going to festivals and we'd go to the Mutech Festival in Barcelona, which was sort of the nearest Mutech Festival to us, which is, I think, it's a criminal thing. It should be one in the UK.
Mutech Festival.
Music, technology. Mutech was always about, I think it started possibly in Canada. And then you have various festivals around the world. I think maybe there's one in Dubai, but I might be wrong. But there are a couple of others, and the nearest one to us was in Barcelona. And the idea is a performance-based festival that brings together kind of musicians who are exploring technology within their work. So you'd have a lot of either sort of interactive or live AV, which is the kind of genre that we hold our hand up to being a part of.
It doesn't really describe the genre of music or really what happens with the visuals. So that's quite a nice broad umbrella to live under.
Yeah, completely. But that's what we would find. Like at the festivals, you'd have all sorts of stuff and some really, really interesting and experimental stuff. I remember there was one act whose name I would not be able to remember, who would use electronic visual means to kind of input into a synthesizer to make sounds. So they would kind of actually sort of draw onto a screen that had some kind of video camera attached to it that then would design software to interpret that into sounds. And by changing whatever it was that was going on the screen, as a live performance, you know, really change the sound. And you had things like that, and there would often be quite interesting installations as well, where people had brought really clever ideas into the space, very sort of technical solutions for creating something quite immersive and interesting. But the thing that we always felt, and the thing that we always found, was that it really often lacked any kind of narrative or lacked any sense of message or purpose to it. So something that was always important for us was for there to be a really clear, maybe not a clear theme, but a theme that, you know, was in our original idea and thinking about putting a project together. So yeah, we sort of started to get together to explore ideas, and then it became apparent that we really needed to just do a first show, really. And that's how it started. We decided on a bit of a theme. We decided on a kind of practical approach to how we could make that work. And we put a show on in Bristol. It was our first foray as Void Null.
Lovely stuff. I'm pretty sure I've gone on about the Void Null stuff a couple of times in a few episodes. I think one where Luke was here, actually, our space correspondent, as we like to call him, because I brought him along to the last show you did. I'm a big fan, specifically the Heat Death one, which is the first one I came to. That sort of theme a couple of times, I think.
Yeah.
But that one was with the two layers, the dust sheets, the double projection and stuff. It rearranged everything. Anyway, why do you think synthesizers, maybe specifically modular, why do you think they work so well in the context of what you're doing? Because I definitely think they do.
Yeah, so, I mean,
so
it's
feel
really
free
good
to
question.
Disagree with me.
No, I think
you
that's
could play a cello if you want to.
Well, you know, to be fair, I have tried to include other types of instruments or sound generating machines. So I've used tape loop and things like that before. So it's not always been about sort of synthesizers. But the fact for me is that my early influence as far as synth goes, you know, way back to the 70s and sort of being brought up on Jean-Michel Jarre and Vangelis. And it was listening especially to kind of the whole Vangelis thing, you know, where you would have long extended pieces of music that would really vary from very kind of ambient through to sort of quite crazy jazz stuff. You know, there were moments also where that sort of really was tied into themes based around sort of space and technology. For instance, you had Vangelis doing the theme to the TV series of Cosmos, which was the Carl Sagan original TV series, you know. So for me, I guess that was the moment that epitomized where it all started, that you've got Vangelis obviously playing his CS-80 and other bits and pieces, making beautiful kind of spacey music, whilst Carl Sagan is very philosophically and poetically talking about the universe and the understanding of how it all worked back then in the 70s. So I think that's something that's sort of deeply seated inside of me. That
part of how Ian works now.
Yeah. It's like, if you're going to talk about space, there's going to be a synthesizer in there somewhere, you know?
That's why there's such a lovely underscore to our spacey bits, whenever they may return.
Just the other point on that, it's like you asked about the modular.
Mm-hmm.
I came to modular in a sort of fairly awkward way, in that my sort of first foray into electronic music really was through a laptop and working with VSTs. You know, I didn't have the ability to do anything kind of creative until that really sort of came to a level of maturity that I could afford and had means, mostly through time. So I'd be sitting on a plane somewhere, you know, going to work and just, you know, making music with VSTs on a laptop. Always saying to myself, well, I'm never actually going to go down the actual physical synth route, you know.
Never.
And then that changed with the Matrix Brute arrival.
Ah, yes.
And there was something about that as a product that made me think, I do need to actually get one of those and see what it's all about. That was the first step into it. And I can remember ordering it thinking, well, I'm never going to get into modular. Gosh, no. And like within 6 months, I was...
There's the slippery slope.
Oh, gosh. But I think it's, you know, modular is a brilliant format for playing live and feeling like you're really experimenting. You know, you've got the potential to really experiment and to do some sort of slightly kind of crazy things that you perhaps don't get with a larger format, you know, massive synth on stage, really.
Lovely stuff. My next question is on your themes, which are never cheerful. Part of the fun, really. If you go to voidnull.tv, cheeky plug there for you.
Thanks very much.
There's a few little demos or teasers, trailers, if you will. And which is that, what's it called? The Great Silence and the Future is Death. How cheerful. But what's been brilliant about your shows is I've turned up not really expecting anything, because I don't think I really asked what we were in for before we turned up. And throughout the whole thing, you're deeply unsettled in the best way by the noise, and it's just, you're completely encapsulated by what James is doing. And it all just goes together so well that you walk out the door kind of shaking, your legs are sort of wobbling, and you're like, will I make it home alive today? Which, I don't know if that's what you're trying to do, but it's definitely having a powerful influence on me as an audience member. But the themes, the thematics are working really well. So my question is going to be, what comes first, the theme or the music? Or is it kind of halfway? You've got a bit of an idea happening, and then suddenly you think, oh, wow, this is like that one probe that buggered off into a planet that one time, and it's sad.
Yeah.
How do you approach picking your themes as well?
I mean, the themes always come before the music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the music is always sort of a bit further down the road, really. We pick our themes. It's based on that idea that we used to spend a lot of time hanging out together and just talking about stuff that we were really interested in. And both of us have quite a deep interest in, you know, all things scientific, really, and, you know, the sort of exploration of the universe, having a bit of an understanding of what's going on around us. All of those kind of themes really are interesting to us. And so, for instance, the future is death theme was based on the theory of heat death, of the sort of long projected far distant future of the universe, you know, where the idea is all energy is burnt out of everything and there's just nothing left, and it's a very, very bleak view. And it's only a theory, because, you know, it's just like, it's looking at the idea of the way things go at the moment, and through entropy energy flows out of things, and you follow that through to a kind of natural conclusion that everything will end up in the same way. And I think that that's a very, very fundamentally existential question to ask about, well, what's life all about if it all is going to boil into nothing? That show for us, we sort of split it into two. So the first half was about the sort of shorter term future of our solar system, where that our sun will expand first of all, probably swallowing the Earth, and then collapses down into a red dwarf, and then, if I remember rightly. But yeah, again, it's a sort of interim bleak future for the solar system. And you kind of think, wow, it's kind of exciting, because it does mean we do need to be thinking long term about kind of the future of humanity. And I'm afraid I'm with Elon when, you know, we talk about the need to become a kind of multi-planet species, really, in order for us to have a long-term future. If we make it that far, we're not doing very well at the moment, are we?
Not especially. But on the brighter side, does your modular give you nightmares? No. Technical challenges for your stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about the visual side of what James is cooking up. What kind of things do you have to do for synchronization? What have been the biggest hurdles for you to overcome?
The first question is always about the kind of the discipline in terms of how we approach a project. So again, going back to that idea of, you know, visiting MuTech was always brilliant, because it was inspiring and seeing what kind of technology people were using. We would always kind of come back to the fact, James sort of came from a background of doing VJing and looking after visuals for some various bands and stuff. So he had a fairly good idea of what was entailed in terms of using visuals in kind of live perspective. You know, we didn't want to go down the route of just having a bank of visuals that we were then sort of circulating through. We really wanted to be careful about how we sort of told the story, and again, had a very particular aesthetic to the visuals. I always feel that it's got a kind of creative heart to it, rather than it's the visuals are accompanying the music. I think it's very much a sense of the two things are joined together in that moment. Up until, I guess, sort of fairly recently, it's really been a case of creating video clips and a whole set of bespoke video clips that are played back in a bit of software called VDMX that James uses at the moment. Sometimes we would use MIDI to cue those clips where we needed to kind of synchronize things. We started off with our very first project was very, very sync locked and MIDI controlled, to the extent that it had some backing tracks that I was then kind of playing live in over the top of. But the overall effect was super tight, which was great. And then very quickly we moved towards it being a far more kind of sort of live less of a sync experience, so that there was a sort of certain flexibility. We had a kind of rough timing to it,
mm-hmm.
and then we would kind of follow each other in terms of the particular kind of minute direction the show was going in. But we're always thinking about how do we work together, how do we kind of maintain some kind of synchronization where there's a level of interest to help kind of tell the story, but at the same time have an element of live and performance to it, because performance is really important for us as well, to kind of be able to be responsive in that moment. So it's a bit of a mix, really.
Lovely. Thank you for answering that one, because I had absolutely no idea. I could have guessed and it would have been much more boring. With your suite of equipment, there's often the big two modular cases. The Matrix Brute came out once, I seem to remember. There's now Lyra involved and other such toys. Any particular highlights that are really inspiring, really key to what you're doing, jump out from the setup?
A really good question.
Or does your inspiration come from the garden shed?
I think for me, there's always, you know, when I first sort of started off and we were working with the backing tracks, all of the backing tracks would be produced in Logic with VSTs. And there's always a sense of like you really are able to kind of get the particular noises that you were really after, rather than sort of turning up on site and then just trying to tweak something to try and get close to the kind of how you mm-hmm. had it. I mean, that's the only thing. It's like with the modular stuff, there can be such a sort of variability to it at times. But I think, you know, I wanted to embrace that. I wanted to sort of feel like there was a point where no two shows were ever going to be the same, even if they're about the same subject. It's just there's going to be performance element to it. But I think in particular, that meant that once we were working away from the backing tracks, then I started to move towards, as well as having the modular set up, that I needed to have something that would help form the backbone to something. So for a while it was the Matrix Brute,
mm-hmm.
but obviously being a monosynth got a sort of certain limitation to that. The kind of the more recent purchase to kind of replace that and to perform those duties has been the...
Oh, the Modal... Not the Argon, the other one.
The other one.
Cobalt. Yes.
Cobalt. The Modal Cobalt, which as a digital synthesizer, I felt had enough of a sense of its own character to warrant being an interesting instrument to play live. What tends to happen is, you know, I will set up a whole bank of sounds on whatever setup that I'm using, and then I'll try not to change the bank throughout that particular set, so that I know that it's there yeah. the whole time, rather than, you know, having any kind of sense of control or moving around. I don't really like having to patch mid-show.
Mm-hmm.
We'll find a sound on the Cobalt that actually then kind of I use to underpin like a whole show.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's been something for me. And the Lyra has been great as well, because that adds just that element of the
Russian quality.
Just the element of the unknown to it, really. Yeah. You know, so much of what we do tonally has a sort of element of darkness to it, I think. And the Lyra fits in with that really, really, really
makes
well.
Sense.
Yeah, completely. You know, you start off making something really beautiful sounding with it. You know, it's just a tiny knob twitch just away from it.
Touch one of the LFOs and all hell breaks loose.
Yeah. And I can remember sort of the first show that I did, we weren't using backing tracks and we'd gotten quite live. And I think it was the first time we did Heat Death. You know, one of the things that I was really interested in was just playing with kind of just bare oscillators, switching in VCOs and just rubbing them up against each other, you know, getting the whole kind of FM thing going in a sort of really uncontrollable way in order to create a particular piece of mood and a particular feeling, you know, at a particular point in the show. So yeah, the Lyra does just that.
There are a few tools apart from the Lyra and modular that are so good for just bare oscillators clanging in your ears.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? It's
uncomfortable in all the right ways.
And it's something that I kind of get drawn to in terms of sort of theoretically from the perspective of just using something really basic through to just actually the effect of using something basic as well, and the effect that it has kind of on the audience.
You're not used to hearing pure tones most of the time.
Yeah, 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 that you don't know when it's going to end. It's an interesting thing.
The next Void Null show, when will it end? Well, you're free from the interrogation for now.
Uh-huh, thank you.
I've been teasing a project, haven't I, Pete, over the last few episodes, a secret project that isn't secret anymore. Hooray! But I think I offer an explanation to some of our listeners who might not know what the ModCaf is, because we do mention it quite a lot when somebody from the ModCaf posts something interesting and I mention it, something like that. Ian, I remember way back in a certain musical store that will remain nameless, I was passing, and Andy, who used to be on the podcast, we haven't seen for a while, Andy, we miss you. Andy was selling you your DFAM, I think. I walked past. He went, yeah. Hey, Andy, you gotta talk to this man here. And then the ModCaf was born. So, what is the ModCaf? Who are we?
Oh, gosh.
Because I'm really bad at summing it up. It's like it's a bunch
who
of dudes.
Who aren't we? Yeah, it's basically a community of like-minded folk who are mostly into electronic music, but there's a kind of a bit of a fringe of...
We've got people who like jazz.
We've got people who like jazz.
And other things.
Ballet.
Why is jazz the only thing coming to mind?
The thing that I always reference when I sort of try and talk about the breadth of the ModCaf was the guy who turned up and with 8 guitar pedals.
Yeah.
And no sound source whatsoever and just played the noise that was bouncing around between the guitar pedals.
It was a very uncomfortable ModCaf. The evidence is on SoundCloud, and it's definitely interesting.
I like it.
And very samplable.
I like it.
Because there's some big tones in there.
But I think, again, you know, it's just that sort of theory of, like, how can we mess this up? How can we do this differently? As opposed to, like, here's a synth with some amazing presets that we can tweak. It's like, well, let's just throw that out the window. And, you know, let's start with no sound sources, you know, just a bunch of effects pedals.
No oblique strategies to save you, just
do it. That's it.
It's a community in Aldershot.
Sorry, yeah, the ModCaf. Yeah, it's a community in Aldershot. So, like you said, it did start in that music shop, didn't it, where we sort of talked about getting together, I think.
The very start was a frustration that we both shared, that modular was miserably inaccessible in shops at the time, and monetarily is the barrier for a lot of people. We just wanted to break that barrier a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. And just by having a regular place, I mean, finding the West End Centre was a really key point for us, I think, wasn't it? Somewhere that was willing to say, well, you can, you know, you can do a collection of money and that can be the rent, as long as people are buying beer. here's the room and here's a PA and, you know, go for it. I think we wouldn't have been able to do it without all the West End Centre being willing, and, you know, Hampshire Culture Trust being willing to kind of help us out and take us on, really. I love it with an absolute passion. I think it's amazing. Just people turning up with a bit of kit under their arm or just coming to listen, you know, it's like, you know, where else can you go for sort of £3 to get a whole bunch of variety of live music and to get people talking about the things that they're passionate about their experimentation, about their work, about the things that they love, to get to have that kind of interaction. There's a sense of kind of camaraderie that people are really for you, you know, that you can't do anything wrong. If you're going to turn up and have a little play on something, it doesn't matter what you do, you can just give it a go and people will love it and kind of support it and be interested in it.
Definitely. And we do have two ends of the spectrum in the complete noobs who've never touched a synthesizer before. We want them as much as we want the people who we have who have incredibly huge brains.
Yeah, absolutely. But
something that Pete and I talk about quite a lot is being really satisfied by watching, mostly it's YouTube videos, but of artisans or other professionals that really speak passionately and with just impeccable, I'm trying to look for a word that isn't expertise, but complete mastery of their subjects. There's something really satisfying about experiencing that. And we get that at the ModCaf as well, frequently.
And I think that's an amazing thing, really, is that kind of level of expertise that you can kind of experience. And at the same time, like you say, a whole bunch of people who just don't operate on that level. I kind of include myself on that. I'm constantly feeling like I'm what's the syndrome?
Imposter syndrome.
Imposter syndrome. That's the one. I kind of constantly sort of feeling like I'm under that sense of the imposter syndrome, and that my level of understanding and technical knowledge is really, it falls very, very short compared to sort of most people's level and understanding at the ModCaf. You know, I have a certain level and certain things that kind of catch my interest and that I know about and I studied and I can make work. I'm always fearful that someone's going to ask me a really technical question and it's just going to be like, no, I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that. But it's the fact that everybody's welcome, I think. You know, I think that's something that we've always tried to be really specific about, is like, if you want to make interesting music, then ModCaf's a place where you can kind of come and hang out and talk to like-minded people.
Definitely. The last question that was going to be for Void Null, Ian, but also for ModCaf, Ian, is what's next? Because we know what's next for the ModCaf. Unfortunately, what was next for Void Null is now what is next for ModCaf.
Ah, we can go there. We can go there.
So now that ModCaf's stolen your fun, what's next for Void Null?
I should apologise to James. He's quite cool with the idea.
Oh, you're just like, nah, James, off you go. ModCaf's time now.
So have you said anything about this at all?
No, I've just been saying, ooh, a secret project.
A secret project. Ooh. Okay, so the Modular Cafe Aldershot is, funnily enough, based in a place called Aldershot, it's just down the road. Yes, from another place called Farnborough. And Farnborough's famous for having an airport and being basically the centre of aviation history in the UK since the beginning of the aviation industry in the UK. So, and one of the things that they have is a wind tunnel that was built in 1935, and it's called Q121. I first discovered this place when some artist friends of mine who were building massive lighting sculptures or installations that needed to be installed in an airport in Asia somewhere to test them out. They needed a big space and they rented this building, Q121, to kind of suspend them. And they wanted me to, at the time I was drone piloting, so they wanted me to kind of fly around them inside this building. And I kind of went in and was just completely knocked back by what I saw, which was this space literally on my doorstep. I kind of describe it as like stepping onto the moon, really. It's such an unusual space. You're not used to kind of walking into a room and it being so large. And the first thing that you're sort of faced with is a 24-foot diameter fan blade, you know, part of the wind tunnel mechanism. So first of all, it's like, okay, this is a bit unusual. Over the corner, there's a big jet engine and there's all these other interesting bits and pieces. And the place kind of looks like it's just been abandoned. It was closed down in the 1980s. It ran up until that point. It was superseded by a lot of other kind of technology. And then things obviously went, you know, a lot of wind tunnels closed down because of the whole CAD stuff.
Technology getting them
exactly.
Obsolete.
But the other part of the Q121 building is something called the return circuit. So obviously there's an enormous amount of wind being moved around in a wind tunnel, and it's not more sort of one directional, it just constantly gets rotated around. And they had designed this big concrete room, which was used to sort of calm the air and to sort of condition it a little bit so it was in sort of better condition and less turbulent for when it's going to be pulled around again. And this return circuit, again, this is another part where it's like stepping onto the moon. It's a very sort of dark, I kind of describe it as a sort of concrete cathedral. It's wedge-shaped. It has these enormous vanes at either end that work at 45 degrees to the sort of end of the room. It's just a really, really unusual space. And the first thing when stepping into it is like stepping into a big echo chamber. So, you know, you immediately start clapping your hands and shouting and making noises, wanting to hear how long the echo can go on for.
It's about, what, 14 odd seconds?
I think it's something like that. Yeah. We did do a test and I can't remember. But we thought, as Void Null, we thought, well, this is an incredible space. I always had that sort of logged in the back of my mind to do something there one day. And we put a project together, got Arts Council funding that meant that we could kind of do a show in Q121. And we were sort of going to base it on the idea of filling the place with smoke and video projecting into the smoke, which created very sort of quite architectural, three-dimensional structures of light within that environment. The sort of the test days that we went in and experimented with the audio led me to, I'd started off with the idea of like doing something sort of quadraphonic, but the reverb is so big in there that you just, the two end speakers kind of get lost. So it was going to be just a kind of stereo left and right at either end of the room. And we were sort of going great guns on it, and then lockdown happened. Mm-hmm. So everything kind of got shelved. And at that point, we ended up doing a kind of an online version of the show, or at least talking about the show and trying to put a little part of it together. So just to give you an idea of some of the ideas for the visuals, it was more about wrapping the project up from the Arts Council project, really, to have some kind of output for what we were doing. And so it's sort of been sat there in the back of my head for a long time again. And then I had a conversation with one of our friends at the Mod Cafe, as a chap called Tom, and he sort of was commenting on the fact that he wondered whether we should look at doing something or having some kind of product, some kind of centralized output that summarized some of the work and the people and the creativity that we have at ModCaf. And it kind of, as soon as he said that, I thought, we should go back to Q121. That is the thing that we should do. So that's the project, basically. As we've got this very rough idea at the moment. Again, something that will be Arts Council funded. The Arts Council have expressed interest in helping us out, to go back and explore the space acoustically, to put some plans together for what individuals would like to do in that room and with that space, and the kind of the various features of the acoustics in there, that which run from the deep reverb, or you go into some of the corners and you have these kind of crazy ripply ping pong delay type effects in the various corners. And we want to make recordings, and we want to make a film about it as well, and to kind of output that as an audio project. The kind of the very exciting thing, and something else that came from that conversation with our friend Tom, was about the idea of maybe getting a bit of a name involved. So somebody that we could really kind of shamelessly use for marketing.
People know you, then they will know us. Thanks for that.
That's the one, yeah. And in our sort of first conversation as ModCaf, is like who we would like to sort of share some project space with on this. The first name that came up with was Adrian Utley. And I thought that was a brilliant idea. And we approached Adrian, and he's actually really interested in being a part of the project. So we're still yet to kind of talk about it, but I think it's okay to
go. I hope so. It's all brewing,
yeah.
Here.
He's going to be part of the project now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Adrian, you can't escape, because, of course, we know you listen to Rec Addicts After Hours.
That's right.
And yeah, you better know that I'm going to be plugging it as it develops and letting you know all the news, but it will be available online in some format sometime in the future at some point somewhere, and I'll let you know when.
Yeah, but that's exciting. Yeah. That's really exciting to, you know, sort of have somebody of that stature who really has caught the vision for what we're trying to do, you know, which is explore an interesting space. For me, it really ties up with the exploration of the history of the place as well. You know, I think it's a beautiful building, really, and it is so representative of the early days of the aviation industry and the history that's kind of represented there. I think it's going to be amazing.
Watch this space. Well, Ian, what we do at the end of our podcast is we do a miscellaneous multimedia recommendation, and I've tried to alliteratize that a lot better, but that's as alliterative as I can get. I'll let you brew on that one, and Pete, save me, I need to figure out something to recommend. But before we jump into that section, do visit voidnull.tv/Q121 if you want a bit of a flavour. I do recommend that video. It's pretty cool. Pete, please tell me you were pre-prepared, because you got something?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, I've definitely got something.
Lovely. Far away.
Right, this is an interesting little one. Oh, it's not that little, actually. Not certainly in the particular gentleman's actual watch, the amount of hits he's had on the video. So this just dropped into my YouTube stream, as these contributors do. You know, I don't know where they sort of, the YouTube algorithm suddenly decides you may like this. So this is I thought it was quite left field. So the channel is called Brick Experiment Channel.
I love that one.
You know it.
I do.
So this is a gentleman, I believe he's in Finland, and he does sort of engineering, science-y type projects with Lego. And he sort of constructs things, but they are interesting things. So there's several where he's constructed various submarines, and they have various different methods of buoyancy and that. And it's all completely, other than some extraneous bits to make them watertight and some neodymium magnets, he's constructed some submarines and has them sort of chugging around in pools. And he gets around all the sort of various negative buoyancy sort of situations. He's also constructed a drone quadcopter using Lego.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
And does lots of gearing and that type of thing. So there's not a massive amount of videos on his channel, But some of them have got some massive amount of hits. Here's one of the submarine ones, 7.7 million hits.
I don't know why they're so satisfying.
Well, you have to look. When they come up, you go, oh, I must look at that. That's something really different.
They're great.
And so, yeah, that's my recommendation for this week. The Brick Experiment Channel, or in his logo, BEC, on YouTube.
Lovely stuff. I've been on a Netflix series just this week. One that I knew about ages ago and never watched for some reason. But let's rewind a bit to a YouTuber that I used to watch back in the day called Olin Rogers. There's a couple of sketches. No, there's three sketches called The Lion's Blaze, which are... they're sketches, and they are sketches about sketches. No, they are kind of takes on old video game cutscenes from the likes of Final Fantasy, things like where a character will have a really short neutral cycle where they're just kind of in their ready position, sort of bobbing up and down, and they just keep doing that for ages, and in a cutscene where they'll say, unsheathe swords, and they've actually already unsheathed their sword like a couple of frames, so it pops back into their scabbard and they unsheathe it again. Lion's Blaze, go find it on YouTube. But this chap, Olin Rogers, wrote a TV series that got picked up by Netflix called Final Space, which has David Tennant in it, which is kind of cool. You wouldn't know it's David Tennant, but he's in there, and it's great. Spacey stuff, cartoony thing, great voice acting, because Olin Rogers has infinite energy, and yeah, just go watch it. You'll be hooked on the first episode, or you'll hate it, but the first episode will get you in if it's going to work for you. Final Space on Netflix. Ian, take us away. What miscellaneous multimedia might you like our listeners to consume?
Do you guys know, I don't even know how to say, is it Abel or Abel Mogard? Have you heard that name before?
No bells at all.
Okay, he's a musician.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a musician. He's what I've been listening to today, talking to my friend James from Void Knoll about this chap. He was like, oh, you should go and check this guy out. And it turned out that I was already following him on Bandcamp, mm-hmm. but I was not particularly aware of him for some reason. It's amazing. It's very sort of interesting, quite deeply textured, ambient, but really has that kind of, you know, the vibe of why I love that kind of music, which is, for me, is all about being able to go into a massive DIY store and listening to, you know, two air conditioning units at the either side of the building that are phasing in and out each other. You know, it's the background sounds that you hear in these interesting places, and his work is just sort of full of that. And there's a whole thing, it turns out, that he was meant to have been a steel worker from, I think it's from Belgrade or somewhere, but it's a completely sort of made up identity. Right. It's like the sort of, you see a photograph of him, and this is this old boy, and it doesn't fit with the music at all. And so it's obviously complete nonsense. And I thought it was a brilliant idea. It's like, you know, sort of create this sort of interesting identity as a backstory to the music and,
cool.
and the person behind it. But the music is awesome. I totally recommend a listen.
So Bandcamp, can you give us a spelling for the
yeah,
name?
Yeah, A-B-U-L.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just reaching for my phone.
So that's not allowed on the Rack Addicts podcast?
Oh, sorry.
Chuck it across the room.
It's M-O-G-A-R-D, Mogard.
Lovely stuff. Thank you, Ian, so much for coming on to our little podcast.
What a lovely pleasure it's been.
Ooh, thank you. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in, because you always do. Find us on social media, please, for once in your life. Facebook, Instagram, Rack Addicts UK. Please! We'll see you in the next episode. Farewell.